I raced this board to make room, thinking that I had still on this board all of Psalm 18, third, second, and third verse, depending upon the versions, or first and second verse. And then I discovered that it started with McGinney, shield of me, which is way down the trip. So I put the rest of the verse up there because I want to end this long series, weeks, on this prayer of Psalm 18 with the final word of the long list of God's metaphorical names that David had learned to rely upon, namely, Mizgabi. But long before we got to Mizgabi, he starts out, I reversed it here, Arhanka, Yahweh, Hizki, my strength. And that's like releasing a trap door, turn loose. The outpouring of these names that have occupied us for the last several weeks. To skip over 32 messages in review, which I won't do today, we focused in before we jumped here on Isaiah 50, when you're in darkness and everything you've done that you know is right, and you're still in darkness and have no light, what do? And take a little of the bass out of my sound. What do you do? You trust in the name of the Lord. Leave it there. And you stay on your God. And then in Psalm 91, having used Isaiah 50 as the cue that God likes to be addressed, and he has revealed himself in his names. God says, because he knows my name, he will call upon me. Take a little more out. And I will answer. That became a license to camp out on his names. Have you learned anything?
Yes, sir.
But we really took a stop in Psalm 18. You've heard me say many times, when God says something more than once through his inspired voices, pay attention. Three times, this psalm. Ironically, the 144th, early in David's life, when it's prefaced by the song he sang before he went to meet Goliath. We have this song. It's the declaration and aspiration of what God, or rather what David wants God to be, as he sings out these various metaphorical names. And in the historical book of Samuel, after the historical record takes him through the victories over all of his enemies, it's put in that place. And then in the Psaltery, the 18th Psalm, it becomes a part of the worship and praise of Israel down through the ages in the first song book as well as the last song book. That means it deserves a lot of attention, and we've given it to them. And through my own crises that hit me during these days, I didn't know that 32 messages ago, God was getting me ready to face a return of Satan and an attempt to break my faith with a return of the cancer symptoms. And you rejoiced with me. You determined with me weeks ago when I said, been there, done that. And faith did it once, and faith will do it again. And you rejoiced with me last Sunday when you saw the PSA had run back down again to 3.75, and you'll be praying with me. I'm now down in the 30 or 40 year age bracket, but I'm greedy for blessing. So you'll be praying with me as I go next week for another test. And I have said, I will let my life be a textbook in living what I preach. Jesus is alive today. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Faith is not some fetish. And with the choice at the intersection of man's way or God's way, I'm going God's way. And you'll see the results. And you did again. I want to close this series out by calling this the vocabulary of faith. I came to town, and one of my annual messages was on Gideon, who's introduced and introduces himself with a vocabulary of doubt. Well, I'm having trouble with this mic. I don't know what to do. You still got a little too much bass. Take your bass out. Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4. Come on. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Leave it there for a moment. How's it sound to you? How many times over the years have you people heard me have to tell the sound man to take the bass out of my microphone? You put that much bass in the microphone of sissies. This message deals with the vocabulary of faith. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
And I cannot offer you a better vocabulary list. You're going to learn language. The lessons, each of them have toward the end, a vocabulary list. How many have ever studied language and seen that? Kids, they learn it and don't know they're learning it. We have to get vocabulary down. I cannot offer you a better one in the Hebrew. It's one of the really few areas that the Hebrew outdoes the Greek. Most of the time, the Greek, into which the Old Testament was translated, the Septuagint version, the Greek makes meanings more precise. Now I'm laboring. Give me a little volume. In this case, the Hebrew outdoes the Greek. Now, you've already got it memorized, haven't you, folks? Ahamka, I love thee. With, that's Yahweh. The first word is Ahamka, the arrow. Yahweh follows it. Ahamka, I, phenomenal prefix. The pronominal suffix, R-H-M, the root word, which is the word for uterus or womb. Now, where I'm going today, David is going to talk of God as strong, and you've learned some words for strength, ooze being a fundamental ones, where God's own strength is imparted to us. And I gave you a little clue for memorizing the word, the Israeli Uzi, that powerful machine gun. Uz, strength that comes from God. Well, when David will say in a later chapter, I'm going to, he knows that God is loving and strong. He will use the word chesed. There are other words beyond that in the Hebrew. And the Greek, as I pointed out, has three words for love. And agapao is the highest form, unselfish, uncalculating, giving of yourself to the other because of the intrinsic value in the object being loved. You know, I'm going to give you permission, Melissa, to kill the sound engineer if I have to face this next Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
And if he's not to blame, I give him permission to kill those guys.
Yes, sir. Understood.
Figuratively. You got that?
Yes, sir.
You probably will have to carry me out of here. Because of the exhaustion of effort, you don't often see me perspire like this, do you? Having to fight through the sound problem that I've got right now. And I also think that you will need to trace out and see if some speakers have been moved. It may be bigger than what we thought earlier, but just switched mics. You want to slip back to the soundboard and see if you can somehow find something that, you know, you hear with your ears. This is tearing me up inside. And the pain is such. Sound waves are powerful sound waves. And I'm in the crossfire up here. And to try to get this message to flow, and I only got 45 minutes, and I normally have an hour and a half. The Greek proved I knew where I was. And they can cut that portion out when they're editing. The Greek, agapao, in contrast to phileo, and you're doing something already, and that's good. Agapao has to do with intrinsic value of the object being loved. Unselfish, uncalculating. They choose that word in the Greek because it's their highest form. To translate this, and it's old hat to you, we've been on it for weeks. Arhamka. Only a mother who bears the child. Can you see the difference? When you're hearing the difference. Only a mother who bears a child knows the feeling, and that's what the Greek tried to capture. Intrinsic value in the object, hardly an object, but that which you birthed and carried to life's gate. That's what's being captured here. Not hasad in a generic sense of love. The love that only the Creator, who intricately wove you, as the Scripture says, thou wove me like an intricate weaver and made me in my mother's womb. The Creator that had you in mind when he brought you forth. This prayer, this vocabulary of faith, makes you stop, and as Martin Luther said, personalize the relationship in that unique way. I really do count to Yahweh. Yahweh wound me. I have a purpose and a meaning. And I may have a sense of I don't have any. Like the old song says, oft times I get discouraged and think my life or my work's in vain. That comes upon all of us. But we have this unique relationship, if you will believe for a moment and have faith in God's Word. That's why you can take the other promise we preached earlier, cast your anxieties on Him, in this case, her. For it matters to Him, her, about you. I got to speed along. My strength, He's key. Yahweh, my cleft rock, Sali. Wum Sadati, my deliverer, fortress, high place, all those meanings embraced. Umphalti, we had that word among the list of salvation words last Sunday. My deliverer, my God, Eli, my rock, Suri, Ekhasibo, from Hasa, to run to the shelter. I will run to the shelter, Bo, of Him. Magini, my shield. Wekarin, the horn. Yishi, of my salvation. And that's where we were last Sunday. All these words are a vocabulary of faith. He is. My Creator. My mom. He is. My strength. He is my rock, the cleft rock, who gave Himself for me. He is my fortress. He is my deliverer, who brings me forth. He is my rock as a solid foundation on which I can stand. He is the shelter to which I can run. He is my shield. He is the horn of my salvation. And now today, He is my high, impregnable, unassailable stronghold. This word, the root being Segob, it's in all the Semitic languages. I haven't got time to catalog it. Segob, in the Syriac, Beit, Gusi, that house like we have Bethany, Beth, Thel, Beth, this, that, house of, the Syriac chooses. Written here, I think. Yeah, here it is. Beth Gusi. But they add, to catch this thought, glorious. My house, Beit, of refuge, Gusi, most glorious. They have to go. It's more than a dwelling place like this fortress. Sadati, it's a fortress, a high place, a stronghold that puts you above and somehow enables you to look down upon. Unassailed, undefeated, incapable of being brought down by that which threatens you otherwise. Now, with that being the vocabulary, I want to sail through the uses of these words, because this whole series has been to teach you and me some additional prayer language. Until it becomes so much a part of you, this is not just a message you came and heard. It's so much a part of you that when you go out of here or turn from listening to this and you confront the attacks that come upon us in this life, particularly if you're trying to follow Jesus, I want you to know how to talk your way out of the circumstance and into God. These are not just poetic phrases. I repeat it painfully. I want it dinned into you. The same words. Until it's so much a part of you, you could preach the message to yourself. I really am his woomie. He's my woomer. There are not words that can explain what it is in a man's being that when he runs, talk about the prodigal son, away from home and remembering what it was like in his father's house. Tighten the focus a little more. There's nobody will understand. Nobody I can go to. Oh, I've displayed in front of you my love for my dad. That's obvious. I don't know if I've ever said this. I never went to Dad with any of my troubles. My whole life, Dad would smile and say, "Okay, son." And I always knew he'd love me no matter what. I went to Mom. Sometimes the truth out of her mouth hurt, but I went to Mom. Dad loved me no matter what. He'd just turn his eyes and wouldn't see what I did. Mom would look right at it, straighten me out about it, lead me through it, and be there to catch me when I stumbled. There's something about a mom that we can go to. I've been saying this now for 5 weeks. Is it sinking in?
Yes, sir.
No, I can't stand these feminists. I mean, you know, I really wish Tiger Woods would sacrifice winning the tournament and hit a long drive and hit that woman on the head that's trying to... Leave those old men alone. They want to play with themselves in the shower. Why should they have some women around? What else have they got as old as they are? Why is it that these perverted women want to watch it? Come on, feminists, go ahead and send me your calls and I will put it in a wastebasket, frustrated women. I know you're superior, but over my dead body, you're going to get a free inch from me. Who would want to be in a club anyway run by a guy called Hootie? Feminists trying to get the key out of the Bible. Well, I'm sorry. Jesus said when you pray, say, "Our Father." But every Mother's Day, I preached on the mother side of God. I don't understand it. But all that a mother can feel, he feels. He said, as a mother bird runs to shelter her young, so will I shelter you. And I preached on Mother's Day of his name El Shaddai, literally the breasted one. He'd knock all those playboy bunnies and playmates off the page, since the only thing they're interested in, and I'm the only preacher to have the guts to translate that word right, I'm your boob god. I'm the breasted one. but with the profound meaning as a mother nestles and nurses her child. The pathetic story came out of Baghdad. Hospitals looted. Mother and father running in a panic with a young 4-year-old child. He'd gone outside thirsty and had drunk something in the gutter, kerosene, in one of the tanks or something. And they're taking him from hospital to hospital and compound of the soldiers to compound, and nobody could help. The follow-up story, they went home. And luckily, the mother was recently with newborn child, and she began to nurse the 4-year-old. And the mother's milk somehow mixed into the inner being of that child and compensated, or I'm searching for the right word, diluted the kerosene. And the boy was out playing. Only a mother would have that desperate feeling. Sure, the father cared. He's there too, begging. I want to get across to you, God has this side to him. And he saw and knew you in the womb, and he wove the pattern. It matters to him about me, about you. He's our strength. The strength that comes from him. As literal as the air we breathe, when faith claims it from my Lord, the next breath can add a strength. This is the vocabulary of faith, not just words. I sat last night and literally sucked in my breath and said, be my strength. And I kept doing it until I realized, time to quit asking the difference between Psalm 144 and Psalm 18. It's time to say, I love thee, O Lord, my strength. My rock. We've been over that ground, Solly, as distinct from Tsuri. The smitten rock that opens the door. All that Jesus obtained is mine to ask for and claim. On through these words. It's a vocabulary of faith, so I want to take an excursion with you. I want to go back and show you how these words were woven into David's life and became a constant pattern with the hope that you will become a man after God's own heart, doing as David did, going through these psalms. Go back to Psalm 57. Or rather, jump from Psalm 18 to Psalm 57. Will you do it in the King James? There's two of you here. One of you get out there. You walk out here on the platform. They don't.
Don't.
Yeah, just get on out there.
Don't.
They no out here on the. They know platform down there. Quit being scared of me today. I need you to walk around up here. The only people need to be scared of me are people that are scared. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
I hate cowards. Don't be scared. But I also, this is one of our best cameramen. It's respect. They have a pattern that they don't block up here, but I need you on the platform today. So as I go back and forth, I got somebody moving around. I have it here in the New International Version, which in some cases is not so good, but most of the time takes into account manuscripts not there when the King James was translated. Have mercy on me, O God, Psalm 57 says in the New International Version, "For in you my soul takes refuge." I want you to watch the use of the words hasa. How it becomes part of the woof and warp of David's life. Where is he? Where is he when he writes this 57th psalm? He's in the cave Adullam. I mean, God really ruined his life. And this will be a familiar story to you, which makes it easy to jump along, because everybody pretty much that's grown up in church knows these stories. His life was ruined. Samuel comes looking for God's choice of a king. His family didn't think this teenager should even be considered. And Samuel looks the household over, knowing God sent him to that house. They're of the line of Pharaohs. It fulfills the promise to Judah. The scepter shall be in the house of Judah. Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin, the people's choice. God went along with it, and they suffered accordingly. But God's choice of the king had to be through the house of Judah. He goes to this house, and he says, "Isn't there someone else? Only this lad out here, tending the sheep." He comes in, and Samuel pours the anointing oil. Later episode, the boy is sent to take food to his brethren who are fighting the Philistines with Saul, and Saul and all the Philistines hunkered down under the trees in cowardice while Goliath bellows at them from across the way. And David, just a boy, who is this uncircumcised Philistine? I wish I could tell you in Hebrew what he really said about him. Wish I could translate it the way that, you know, that really doesn't. I mean, that doesn't sound like a cuss word, does it? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine? But I'll pass that glorious opportunity to hear David's true description of Goliath's kabodic or glory. You know, I love the Bible if you could really read it the way the way it is. And he sings the psalm that opens Psalm 144 about the Lord who teacheth his hands to fight and his fingers to war, or vice versa. And you know the story, he killed Goliath. He then comes in, and they sing the song, Saul killed his thousands, David killed his ten thousands. And Saul becomes jealous, throws a spear at him, chases him. He has to flee for his life. And the anointing of God and the call of God and the glorious selection of God put him in a cave in Adullam. And everybody that was in distress and discontented and in debt came to him there. And I've often imagined him sitting in that cave, looking at that decrepit bunch of debtors, discontents, distressed, that came to him because of their needs. They had tried everything else. He was their only hope. And he's penning this song. And what's he saying? "Have mercy on me, O Lord, my refuge." Now, to the carnal looking on, it would seem that he's taken refuge in the cave at Adullam. But David didn't see it that way. Yes, the cave was a temporary shelter. But early in his life, He learns to distinguish between the things of time and what is really real. Because not the cave. Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me, for in you, not in this cave, in you, my soul takes refuge. Remember Psalm 84? Those who go through valleys of weeping, blessed is the man. You know, I'm 73. I've preached this all my life. But I think I'm just really beginning to understand the truth of it and to live in it. It's so easy to talk the talk. The valley of weeping comes. How do blessed men go through it? Blessed is the man whose strength, whose is in thee, not the circumstance. Circumstances go up, down, dark, light, change. He never changes. That's what he's saying here. Man, God, you've got me in a mess. Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me, for in you, in this cave my soul takes refuge. In this cave my body takes refuge. No, no. In you my soul takes refuge. Hasser. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings. I cry out to God Most High, to God. He sends from heaven and he saves me. Yeshi. He saves me. I taught you last Sunday what that word means. In distinction with Netzel. Like God uses Netzel in Exodus 3 and 6 when he takes them out of Egypt. Takes them out of the problem. Yeshi, when they come to the Red Sea and God says, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Yeshi, God comes to you where you are and literally removes the oppressor. Netzel takes you out of the condition. Yeshi comes where you are and conquers the situation for you. That's why I said last Sunday, I feel almost sorry for my cancer cells. He comes into you. The point I'm making is early on, David's refuge. The old hymn of the church was written with this psalm in mind. Hiding in thee, hiding in thee, O blessed rock of ages, I'm hiding in thee. The psalmist inspired that song. The songwriter confesses it, and in the old high church hymnals it's put with this song. Two words early on, engrafted into his vocabulary and life. Yeshi, Hasse. Let's find some more. Go to the 59th Psalm. You're going to King James? I'll go where I'm going. Stay on the board. Not on me right now. Or stay on me, not on the book. Gotta find 59. New International Version. Oh, here it is. Are you there, folks?
Yes, sir.
I'll read the New International Version. Listen to the four words that start. Start of each sentence. Deliver me from my enemies, O God. Netzel. Remember? I put on the board the different words for salvation a couple weeks ago. I've already referenced it. It's the word used in Exodus 3 and 6 when God delivers them out of the circumstance, instead of coming into the circumstance and conquering that which threatens. natural. Deliver me from my enemies, O God. Protect me. Sagab. That's where we are right now. Protect me, they translate it. It's put me on a high place. Lift me up. Put me beyond the reach. Make me impregnable. Become my stronghold. That's what the word means. He's already well into it this early in his life. Well, now, what's the circumstance of Psalm 59? I'd like to go out of the grammar for a while and into the history. I've already referenced this in an earlier message. What's the circumstance? Saul, David's married now, a daughter of Saul. I told you this story a few weeks ago. Michael, Saul's daughter, like Jonathan, knows Saul. And as David comes into the house, she says, "You got to flee. My father is going to send men here to kill you." And he flees. And then Michael, she's clever. I think there's a certain irony in this, too. She takes an idol and puts it in his bed and puts some goat hair on it so that see hair and covers it up in the bed. And David escapes, and sure enough, the men come. And they look and they think that he's in the bed, and Michael says he's sick. And they go back and tell Saul. He's sick. Well, Saul's the Saddam Hussein of that day. Saul says, "Go get him, bed and all." So they go and get what they think is David, sick on his bed. And it turns out, when they lift the covers, it's an idol. And David's long gone. This is the circumstance that David's reflecting on. Being hunted like an animal, and writes this psalm. See, his psalms didn't come out of sitting with his feet on a desk and thinking, what cute little poetry can I write for the Saturday edition? And his natural enemies typify the spiritual enemies that we face daily, who will enter into any circumstance. As God, proper translation of Romans 8:28, God enters into, all things don't work together for good. God enters into all things to work His good for them which are the called according to His purpose. Well, He responds to faith. He does that for favors. The devil doesn't wait to be asked or trusted. His minions, the demons, will enter into any circumstance to compound it. Moving into that like a surfer to intensify its effect on you. Oh, so few Christians even believe. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, against these other beings. And David's natural enemies typify those demonic evil forces. They're hunting him everywhere. And David's prayer is, because he's still learning to use these words, "Deliver me, Netzel, as you did the Israelites from Egypt, from my enemies, O God." Now don't think of that person you can't stand in the little office box next to you. The devil might use them when he finds it bothers you. But think of who your true enemies are, who want to break your faith connection. Satan and his minions. Protect me, Scubby. Lift me up encircle me, make me impregnable, lift me above it, make me unassailable. That's what an earlier psalm said when I translated it properly. God sweeps all of his elements together and excessively presents himself to surround with Uzzah, the same root word, Uzzah, his strength to those of us in trouble. That's what's being asked. Do that kind of elevating me above my problems. Deliver me, Netzel again, from evildoers, and save me from bloodthirsty men. Three times now, the vocabulary. There's two of them here. Three times, the vocabulary is cropping out. Save me, Yetzir. Sagab, deliver me. Netzel is deliver me. Protect me. That's the gob. Get me in a place where they can't reach me. When you put the M in front and the pronominal suffix, Nisgabi, you're saying, my high place, my unassailable place, my glorious house of refuge, to use the Syriac. Something that's beyond just refuge, unassailable placement. Three words he's using. Save me. Protect me. Deliver me. Netzel. What I want, not to be lost as I sweep the history and relate to the words, he practiced what became the conclusion of his life. It was at the start of his life, more as a request in Psalm 144, even though it's backwards in the numbers in the Psaltery. At Psalm 18, we have, in old age, all the victories won. He's declaring what God is and has been, and God is that to him, and has been that to him, because from his earliest first encounter with Goliath, this has been his constant prayer. Well, if it worked for him, against visible enemies out to kill him every day, I think it's worth you practicing it. And I can tell you at 73... and with cancer on the defeat, I've learned he is and will continue to be, to those who trust him, all of this. When your troublesome time comes, learn from David. He didn't just hear a preacher preach this. You say, put that in the column of a useful prayer someday. It was his life pattern. Every day, as he faced his enemies, deliver me, Netzel, from my enemies, O God. Protect me, Sgabi, from those who rise up against me. Deliver me, Netzel, from evildoers, and save me from bloodthirsty men. Yeshi, all my strength, the later verse, all my strength, Uzi, I watch for you, O God, for you, O God, are my fortress, Nisgabi, my loving God, Hasad. Three times in this one, you see it's the vocabulary of faith that carries him through it. Are you on a page with me?
Yes, sir.
I go to another one. Already been here. Sixty-one. Hear my cry, O God. Listen to my prayer. From the ends of the earth I call to you. I call as my heart grows faint. Now, we don't know whether this was when he was fleeing Absalom or when he was fighting in the very same places that the U.S. and British soldiers are fighting today in his campaign by the Euphrates River, because he cemented a kingdom together from the Euphrates River to the Nile in the heyday of his reign. And scholars debate whether he was feeling a yearning for the house of God clear over in Babylon in the Euphrates River, or whether he was fleeing to Mahanaim from Absalom and the ark and God. He felt away from God's presence. And if you've ever felt distant like that, like Isaiah 50, in darkness with no light, he says, hear my cry. Listen to my prayer. From the ends of the earth I call to you. I call as my heart grows faint. There may be some of you listening whose heart has grown faint. I call as my heart grows faint. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Remember? Bethsur. To the rock. Yerom. He is high. And Bethsur, they translate it to the rock, but the B is the pronoun in. Or the preposition, rather, in. In the rock. Personalize it. He is high. And he's using Suri. In the rock. Not to it. In the rock. The next word, literally, Yerum. He is high. Memini. More than me. Lead me. You remember I helped you memorize that, the saying, Tanhine? Tanhine, really. But I remembered it by, you know, sometimes you lead people that are your responsibility by tanning their hiney. And that helped me remember this. Lead me. Make the circumstances such, O God, that I have no other choice. There's no place. I'm struggling to get to that Sagab, which is Sagab, impregnably above, able to vault through. Whatever you have to do, when God thinks the time is ripe, don't hunt for it. He'll bring you there. Your prayer will be in the rock. Now, the rock is Christ. How do you get in? Romans 8, elementary. You're in him when he's in you. And Christ is formed in your heart by faith. That's why I'm trying to get these faith handles in front of you until this is your lifestyle. This is your vocabulary. In the rock. These metaphorical, poetical phrases are names of meaning to call God forth in you, in other words. You're high. More than me. I'm smothered down. Tenhani, lead me. Whatever you have to do, get me there. To the rock that is higher than I. Past tense. For you have been my refuge, Hasa, a strong tower against the foe. Tower dash ooze. A source of strength high above any other source. Ooze. And I take refuge. Ahasa again. I take refuge in the shelter of your wings. Rock, refuge. And that takes me to the last psalm. I want to show you how the vocabulary flowed through David's life, where I just touched a few weeks ago, at the very moment that I faced the decision with what appeared to be the return of cancer symptoms, PSA reading only, no other symptoms. And I faced doctors again who told me very intelligent choices that use the arm of flesh. And I made the decision, even before I announced it to you a few weeks ago, because that very night I was led to this psalm and then I backed out of it, only reference it. But as I come to the close of Psalm 18's lengthy prayer, I go back to this Psalm 62. Don't have to spend much time on it. This truth is so obvious, you're going to run from it. It's got a strange rhetorical device. The sentences begin, "Ach." Ach, which translates with much difficulty. It's alone, only, singularly. J. Vernon McGee calls it the only psalm. I join the scholars that say it should be translated alone. What's it say? Alone. That's the first word in the Hebrew. You can't translate it properly. It just says, smack. Get this before you hear what follows. Alone. Not this plus. Not this and maybe that. And not you, Lord, plus this. Alone. Everything else fails. All else is sinking sand. Alone, my soul finds rest in God alone, though the Hebrew has it at the front. There's only one place of rest. My salvation, Yeshi. My salvation comes from Him alone, Yeshi. Alone, my rock. Alone, my rock, Suri. Alone, my salvation, Yeshi again. Alone, my fortress. Mishgabi, the last word of Psalm 18. Alone. I remember it was almost midnight on Saturday night when I was once again facing, am I going to go for radiation surgery, follow the doctor's advice, or... And I found myself confronting this. Now, you can do with your life what you want. Like David. I have followed Him, believing. He came out of that tomb. It's not some poetic imagery to me. I've hung my life on it. All these years, preaching and living faith. Now, in a life and death decision, I got a choice. I'm going to read. No, I'm not. You've got to have some faith some measure of faith in God to be a Christian at all. But most Christians trust God, but. And of course, the devil's got plenty of pseudo-faithers running around in jerkwater cults where parents impose their faith on their kids, like Jehovah's Witness, and the kids die. Regard to blood transfusions, for example. But I have followed Jesus one step at a time, from a doubting Thomas to a proof of the resurrection, and a life where, unlike some preachers who couldn't do much else, all I have to do is call Standard Placement Office, and Plato hasn't said anything different. My PhD's in philosophy, and Plato hasn't said anything different, neither has Aristotle, since I left Stanford. I'll have to do what I'm doing. I've done it because I believe, and I've hung my body on it. But right now I'm at that live or die decision again. And somehow or other, I end up at Psalm 62 on a Saturday night a few weeks ago when I made the decision, knowing I would preach it as it unfolded. Will it be God plus something else, or ock? It almost has a pun meaning to it. If you don't believe in God, it's scary enough to make you gag. Ach. Only God is my rock. Only God is my salvation. Only God is my niece Gabi. And He will only be that when I graduate from God plus to only you, God. And if I go through the gates in this last swing, I'll be able to enter and say, I went out with you alone, my strength, my rock, my fortress, my high place, my niece Gabi, my salvation, my deliverer, my fortress, my stronghold. I recommend it. But don't go prematurely. Start practicing all these words. I've been down this trail a little longer than some of you. But with David, I'm going to say to him when I get there, you're right. That's the only sure foundation. I want you to say, if I beat you there, to me, you're right, Pastor. I eventually figured it out. Only He is my rock, my Savior, my deliverer, my protector, my high tower. And that's